Wayfair's Labor Day clearance is here. Right now, score up to 70% off everything home, plus fast shipping on everything right to your door. Shop now through September 2nd at wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
A short shelf life here on this show because we got the great Ian Cummings coming up next here on Barrett's 365. He's going to break down the Eagles NFL draft class for us. All right, they got 10 new players. Plenty of good ones. They got Jahad Campbell, round one, obviously Andrew Mukuba. We're going to talk to our guy, Ian Cummings. He's joining us now here on Birds 365. The draft expert joins us from Pro Football Network. Follow him on Twitter at IC_draft. Ian, welcome to the show, man. How you doing on this Tuesday morning post-NFL draft? I'm sure it was a long grind for you getting through that process.
Yeah, post-NFL draft is the key word there because it was definitely a grind. Happy to get through it. Every year, you know, you total under 10 hours of sleep through that three-day stretch, right? So it's good to get through it. It's good to get on the other side. Man. And, you know, we're already kind of turning the page to 2026, you know, behind the scenes, you know, getting the big board set up and everything right. And getting the early observations. But a lot of excitement with the 2025 class. I think overall there weren't too many team classes where I was like, I'm not sure about that. I think there's a lot of potential energy for every team and for the Eagles trying to get the repeat. So I think they scored value, and that's the most important thing.
Yeah, I think they did a really good job getting trade space, you know, how we talked about what you're trying to do on day three, try to find somebody who's got an NFL trait and sort of build on it. I think they did a good job. But, you know, I have concerns on day one and day two with the Eagles pick. So we'll start there, Ian. Jahad Campbell, I know, you know, there's injury concerns. I mean, that's a tremendous value if there isn't injury concerns. But they also have the aspect of looks like they evaluate him a little bit differently than most people who evaluate him as a typical off-ball stacked linebacker. Looks like the Eagles want more of the, and I call it the Andrew Van Ginkle role with Vic Fangio in Miami. They want to turn him into part edge rusher, part off-ball linebacker, part flat defender, all these different things. Very versatile player. Do you think he, from a personal standpoint, do you think he has that kind of skill set if he is healthy?
I think to a degree, for sure. You know, I think he was a former edge recruit coming into college, right? So I think he, you know, in high school, he had that experience, and then they moved him to off-ball linebacker at the collegiate level. And there he kind of showed what he could do in space, you know, the gap instincts, the ability to go sideline to sideline, the ability to play in coverage as well. One of the best coverage linebackers in the class, I think, with the ability to either drop in Tampa 2 or man up big slot wide receivers and tight ends. So a really versatile player is what you're getting, right? And so I would say to that role projection, I wouldn't want him to be an edge full time, right? Because 6'3", 235, he's definitely a little lighter for the position, and that would show up if he was asked to be an edge setter, right? So on early downs, maybe you're looking for him to play from depth at the off ball spot and just kind of knife downhill with that long strider speed and that elite range. Like I don't want to, like, that's not hyperbole. He has some of the best range of any linebacker the past 5 years. So, you know, when it's run defense, I think you let him start off in space and use that range. But then as a pass rusher on those obvious passing downs, I think that's when you can let him pin his ears back either from, you know, wide 9-7 tech or blitzing up the A gap or the B gap. I think he's got the burst. He's got the bend. And there is a semblance of hand usage ability too with that edge background. So there's a ton of versatility, right? How you use it is going to be the key puzzle in this discussion. But I mean, there's no defensive coordinator that I'd rather have him, you know, play under than Vic Fangio in that regard, because I think Vic Fangio has proven that he has a scheme and a system that's worked for him for a long time, but he's also willing to mold roles within that system based on the talent that he has. And Jahad Campbell is a universal talent. I mean, he can rush in certain situations, mainly one-on-one, right? But he's got the speed, the burst of men to create angle advantages. He can play in coverage. He can gash downhill and run defense. The one thing that I wanted to keep improving, and this is probably why, another reason why I don't really like him as a full-time edge. So I wouldn't, you know, I'd want to limit his early down snaps there because his play strength, his take-on technique against run blocks can still improve. You know, that's still kind of a part of his game that's underdeveloped, but everywhere else, as long as he's healthy, right? That's the key. I think he's an absolute chess piece for you. And I think Vic Fangio is going to have a lot of fun thinking of ways to work him into the defense.
Yeah, versatility can be a great thingy. And there is also a line of thinking where it's like, you know, jack of all trades, master of none, you know. And I think a lot of Eagles fans are hoping that this guy can get after the quarterback using a first round draft pick on him. How well do you see his skill set, his traits translating over to the NFL as an edge, as getting after the quarterback, not as an off-ball linebacker?
Yeah, for sure. And I think, the beauty of getting after the quarterback is a player like him can do it a variety of ways. You know, he's not a guy who's just going to be rushing from wide nine. Like, right. he can certainly do that. But I think, and getting Ty Robinson on day three, in my opinion, was really important for this, because I think he helps improve the depth of the defensive line unit. And he's also got some alignment versatility too, where he can play three tech, five tech. So I think now that you have a deep enough interior line, Jahan Campbell is the type of pass rusher that you can move around across the front, right? If you rotate him down to wide nine, you know, so theoretically you got a tackle. Imagine that you had a tight end outside the tackle, right? Jahan Campbell would be on that tight end's outside shoulder. That's how wide he is in nine technique. And from nine technique, that's great, because he's a runway to use that elite explosiveness and speed to just get an angle around the apex, right? And then he's got the bend capacity, the angle flexion to reduce his surface area, get underneath while sustaining that acceleration. And then his pursuit speed, his closing ability on the quarterback in pursuit is just incredible too. Like, he's a guy who will force fumbles, he'll generate turnovers. I mean, whatever you need this guy to do, when he has that runway to be a playmaker and to just pin his ears back and go 100 miles an hour, that's when you can really thrive. But at the same time, like, yeah, that's more of a pure pass rusher role, but you can also do simulated pressures and you know, feigned coverages with him. You can have him look like he's going to drop and then blitz from depth, you know, and just sear up the A gap. Again, right. He's got the speed and the bend to do that. He proved that he could do that at the collegiate level. And you can also have him look like he's going to blitz and then drop into coverage, right? So it's not just about pass rush, right? He's obviously, I think he can be a very dynamic and versatile pass rusher for you. But in the passing phase, I think an even more important element of it is playing with what the QB sees pre-snap, right? And I think Jahan Campbell is the perfect linebacker for that. Because again, if you need him to feign the blitz, drop into coverage, he can do that. If you need him to, you know, generate pressure even from depth, some guys don't have the speed to do that. He does. So there are a lot of different ways you can use him. I wouldn't confine him to a pure pass rushing role. Like, hey, you're going to be at nine sack on all of these snaps, right? Obviously, you have certain packages, but
so
I think
you don't see like a Micah Parsons type future. You see more of that Van Ginkle different usage with
Yeah, for sure. I think Micah Parsons coming out, I think the play strength was a little bit superior with him. You know, I think he had a little bit more compact mass in his frame. And I do think Jahan Campbell can add to that. But I think the beauty of what Campbell has to offer, right, I don't think he's going to be quite that elite pass rushing element that Parsons was coming out. But I do think he's a player who can disguise your intent on any given down. And I think Vic Fangio in particular is going to love what he can do with that. So you got to be creative with him. But if you can be creative and Fangio can, the sky's the limit.
Yeah, sounds like a Fangio player.
Yeah, sounds a lot like Andrew Van Ginkle. So I think that's the Eagles' projection. I think that's been lost in the sauce for many because most, and it's understandable, but after listening to how we talk, I mean, they project him as more than an off-ball linebacker. It's just how much more, mm-hmm. I guess, is what we're going to see
for sure
over the years. Round two, Ian, another potential size issue as I look at it. And from this perspective with Andrew Mukuba from Texas, the safety, you know, he looks like a missile to me, mm-hmm. and he plays like he's 210 pounds.
Yeah.
And he's not. He's 185 pounds. I went through this here with Philadelphia with the Eagles with Avonte Maddox. He's a very physical player when he was here, but tremendously undersized. And he get hurt a lot because he's taking on NFL players and he's playing like he's 20, 25 pounds heavier. I get that feel. Is Mukuba a little bit too undersized in your mind to be a full-time safety at this stage?
I don't necessarily think so, because there are some roles of the safety unit that don't call for as much physicality on a down-to-down basis, and I think that he can play some. So I think I would word it like this. I think his weight is probably the biggest red flag on his profile, right? You know, he played at the collegiate level at 185 pounds. I think I saw a report that he was up to 190. We'll see if he can bulk up a little bit, right? You know, NFL training programs are good for that, and I do think he can add a little bit more compact mass to his frame. I don't think he's maxed out quite yet. So that'll be the key to look at that. But I think with Andrew Mukuba, again, you know, he's an absolute Swiss Army knife on the back end, and he can play single high if you need him to. He can play two high. You know, he can come into the box and enforce a little bit, like you said. And I think that, you know, at the collegiate level, at least, right, you know, it's difficult to project injuries because it can be a big wild card for a lot of guys. Like, there are some guys who have injury issues at the collegiate level and then go on to be absolute Iron Men at the NFL level, right? And there are guys that have a clean bill of health and then injuries end.
Lowe's knows that free makes everything better. That's why our rewards members get free standard shipping on the things they need and want, starting at Silver Key status every day. Savings for rewards members add up fast, so why wait? Join for free today. Lowe's, we help, you save. Not available in Alaska and Hawaii. Exclusions and more terms apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/shipping terms. Subject to change.
Up taking hold and kind of, you know, off-railing their NFL career. So it's really difficult to predict. There's a lot of entropy in the process and just bad luck that goes into it, which is unfortunate. But, you know, I think Andrew Mukuba, for his credit, injuries were not a nagging issue at the collegiate level. Even with how physical he played, he still managed to stay available. So I would take that as a small point of solace for him. Now, he's definitely got to bulk up the frame a little bit, but you talk about a guy who can play single high. I think, you know, one of the main appeals of his profile is that he's going to, you know, not only is he going to be physical and enforced downhill, but he's going to, you know, dissuade quarterbacks from making throws just in general, because his coverage mobility is incredible. I'm one of the most fluid, malleable athletes that I've watched in my time scouting. And that's not an exaggeration. You know, he's so fluid and so, you know, free flowing when it comes to really sharp transitions in space and sinking. And, you know, not just that, but the reactionary athleticism, the ability to really, you know, instinctively process route concepts and, you know, flip his hips in tandem. His hips and his feet and his mind all move at the same speed. And it's really exciting to watch, because you have a guy who is an absolute safety blanket on the back end. He's got the range to make plays on the ball, but, you know, I just think occluding those passing windows and just doing his job on the back end, like, there are some throws that if you've got a deep post, Andrew Mukuba is going to process that. He's going to get in the receiver's hip pocket, and that QB is not going to want to make that throw as much, right? So it won't be the only role that he's playing, obviously, but I think his value goes beyond the simple enforcer role. I think you have a guy who really completes your secondary, as long as he can stay healthy, you know, bulk up a little bit more. That definitely is a red flag for him. But for me, it's one that I'm willing to not look past, but willing to take a chance on him regardless, because one, he did hold up at the collegiate level, and two, he's so talented and versatile outside of that.
How'd you have him graded out with the other safeties? You know, Kevin Winston Jr. was still on the board when they took him. Xavier Watts was still on the board when they took him. How did you have Mukuba ranked, you know, in your safeties coming into the draft?
Yeah, so he was my safety too, actually, behind Malachi Starks. So I was a big fan of him. I've, you know, ever since his Clemson days.
Even over Emin Wari.
Yeah, yep. Wari, to me, the athleticism was there, but I had concerns about his processing and diagnosis and run support. So I was kind of like, for a bigger guy, I thought he needed to be a lot more consistent in that phase. So I think Mukuba, you know, definitely a smaller, lighter guy. But, you know, dating back to the Clemson days, I just, you know, it sounds really simplistic, but like, looking at how he moves different. I mean, twitchy, fluid, malleable, you know, to the S tier, you know, in each of those categories. And then you look at the processing ability that he has. He's such a natural, you know, intelligent, high IQ player on the back end when it comes to recognizing where the offense is going and where it needs to be, you know, understanding his relationship to the routes, but also his teammates. You know, just a really fundamentally sound player who also has the athletic coverage upside that you want, the playmaking ability. So yeah, he was my safety too.
And to be clear, Ian, I want to be clear for the people, you know, how he played up everything you just said, his tremendous ability in space as a coverage player. And that was, you know, my concern, because he plays so physical that, you know, at times when you do come up and run support and, you know, plays a lot like Sidney Brown, he's like a million miles an hour.
Yeah.
I think that might be an issue, but hopefully, but from a, you know, a coverage standpoint and a space standpoint, that's what the Eagles were looking for, and I think that's what the Eagles got. And I think you explained that well. Day three, you already mentioned him a little bit, Ty Robinson. Getting to meet these guys, Ian, boy, I rarely am I impressed by a prospect more than Ty Robinson. He's pre-med. He's got 19 credits at one point. He's playing high-level football in Nebraska. I mean, this kid is just a worker. You know, if he does fail, it's not going to be because of a lack of work ethic or anything of that nature. What do you like about him most as a player? The versatility?
Yeah, that's probably up there. You know, I think being 6'5", around 290, 32-inch arms, you know, plays a little bit taller than most of your 3-techs, 5-techs, you know, what have you. So I think that'll be something to keep improving. But for his size, I think the leverage acquisition is pretty solid. And one, you know, he's so explosive at that size. I mean, he can get in the backfield in the blink of an eye. You know, whether you need him to penetrate up gaps or reset the line and run defense, he's so explosive. He's generating so much momentum and force into contact that guards virtually can't displace him, right? You know, he's a guy who is going to beat down blocks and base blocks with ease because of that explosive capacity and that physicality at the point. But then he has some versatility as a pass rusher. You know, he can rush from 3-tech. He can rush from 5-tech. There are even some reps rushing outside that a little bit, right? I'd keep him in the 3-5 window, but I think you do have some inherent versatility with how you can use them, and just that explosive capacity that allows him to, again, generate force, reset contact. But then also, if he's a pass rusher, like, he's got really good ankle flexion and lower body flexibility too, so he can get upfield and get a step on guys up gaps and then bend inside and enter pursuit too. So that flexibility helps him a lot as a finisher, which he showed with his production in his final year at Nebraska. So really fun player. I think, you know, be alongside Jordan Davis and Jalen Carter, he really complements them well, because you have a guy who's that explosive, you know, penetrator, you know, force generator, who can really do whatever you need him to in either phase. You know, he's a little bit lighter in the run game, so you want to make sure that the pad level gets honed down. You don't want him to be drifting too tall, because then guys can get, you know, forklift underneath him and drive him out of gaps. But aside from that, I think he's so explosive. You know, and he's a pretty intelligent player, experienced too. So, you know, he just provides a lot of, you know, a pretty complete picture, a complete skill set at the defensive tackle class, despite being a little bit undersized. So I had a top 100 grade on him too. So that was another one where I was like, the Eagles got pretty impressive value there, but they also had a need withstanding there. You know, I think Moro Ojomo, I was a big fan of Ojomo coming out as a prospect, and he did show some good stuff down the stretch in the playoffs.
Yeah, he showed some great stuff last year.
Yeah, but I think you needed one more guy in that rotation. And Ty Robinson, in my opinion, is as good a guy they could have added at that point.
Yeah, you lost Milton Williams. Do you think Ty Robinson is a year one contributor on that defensive line again?
I think pretty early. Yeah, I think there may be a small acclimation period with the size and the taller frame. You know, he's going to have to learn that you really got to get your base beneath you in the NFL, because these guys, if you make a mistake, they're going to capitalize. It's not like the collegiate level where an imperfect rep can get the win.
Right.
So he's his build is a little unorthodox. I think he's going to have to learn how to manage that. But he's so athletic and so explosive too. And he's got a hot motor. I mean, he comes out with 100% physicality on every rep. I don't think it's going to be too much of an issue. You might see him a little bit slower to kind of churn up earlier in the year, but I think there's so much talent on that line too, and he's in a great defense where they can put him in a position to succeed. I'm not too worried about it. I think by, you know, the midpoint of the season, he'll start to catch his stride, and you'll see some really good things from him.
There's one guy, Ian, I can't get a beat on. I don't know what the feel about him. So I need your help. And that's Mac McWilliams. I, you know, where are you with this prospect? Seems like most people are projecting him inside as a slot corner.
Yeah.
I see everything else in this draft pretty clearly, at least from the Eagles' standpoint, what they want. Not so sure with Mac McWilliams. What do you think about him?
Yeah, so he's a guy who has some of that two-phase playmaking ability, right? And I think he can play nickel, he can play boundary as well, which is a really fun aspect of his game. And I think, you know, 5'10", 185 around there. So it doesn't quite have the size profile that they've been coveting from guys at least in recent years. But that's, I think, why they would project him into the slot, because mainly their boundary guys are a little bit taller, a little bit bigger, right? So I think Mac McWilliams has the build and the athletic makeup that you want, but the ability to, again, convert at the catch point for his size and then also make plays coming downhill. I mean, this is a guy who has a really fast play pace, and he can process, he can get downhill. He had 7 tackles for loss in 2024. But then at the same time, too, I think go back to 2022, he had 10 pass deflections, too. So he's proven that he can make plays, be it at the catch point or, you know, crashing downhill and, you know, engaging blocks, making tackles. So, you know, I think at his size, again, there's going to be a little bit of an acclimation period, but the vision was pretty clear for me. He was, you know, not a guy that was heavily on my radar. I did watch a little bit of him, but I didn't know if he was going to get drafted or not. But once you get to that day three range, there are a lot of, you know, under the radar nickel guys who project pretty well, who were kind of slept on throughout the process. And Mac McWilliams to me kind of fits that bill. You know, I think the Eagles were pretty savvy to have him on their radar. And, you know, with the athleticism, the two-phase playmaking ability, I do think that he can factor in the rotation. Is it going to be a starter? I don't know right away, but I do think at the very least is quality depth for you with that playmaking propensity.
Certainly seems like there's a theme with these defensive players drafted by the Eagles. So, you know, betting on those traits, that high upside. Talk to me about Smile Mundon, Ian Cummings. Where'd you have him rated out there as an off-ball linebacker? Another Georgia Bulldog coming to Philly. What do you think of Smile Mundon? How'd you have him ranked?
Yeah, so he was actually a top 100 player for me too. So like the Eagles,
I love Smile Mundon.
It's like a best hits of value, man. It's crazy, but Smile Mundon. I think around 6'2.5", I want to say, around 230, maybe a tad lighter, 228, 229 at the combine, but I think he'd get up to 235. He's a really fun player, man. I mean, former 5-star recruit. He's got the athleticism that you want, but he was a defensive back recruit coming out of high school. So, you know, I think with Jahad Campbell, you're getting the versatility. I think Smile Mondon is kind of, you know, I wouldn't put them in the same category as prospects, but I do think there's a lot of athleticism and versatility that carry over for both guys. Smile Mondon is one of the best athletes in the class when it comes to, you know, again, being a little bit light, a little undersized, but he's explosive and he's really, really fluid. I mean, watching his coverage tape, I'd say probably the two of the top linebackers in the class in coverage, if I had to put together a top three, Jahad Campbell and Smile Mondon would be two of the top three coverage linebackers in the class. I mean, Smile Mondon is so good at, you know, again, reducing, planning and driving. He looks like a safety out there sometimes playing off man against those tight ends on those out routes where he can just, you know, plant and drive, click and close and just make a play at the contact point. But then at the same time too, in run defense, his take on technique is pretty good. Obviously he's not going to be elite in that area yet, being under 230 pounds, he's definitely got to add a little bit more mass to his frame. But I do really like how he acquires leverage with his base, how he uses his length to anchor blocks and kind of set the line. And then he's pretty good at engaging at the second level too. So needs some for the play strength a little bit. But I was a big fan of him coming out. I think probably right out of the gate, a really good sub package linebacker in those coverage looks. You know, where he can play in zone or he can man up a guy in the slot if you need him to as an overhang linebacker against a big nickel. I think he does legitimately have that safety-esque coverage ability at his size, and he's so athletic. It kind of serves as a failsafe for him. And then you kind of look at how he played at the Georgia defense. This guy was a veteran presence. I mean, he was really good at doing his job, but also getting teammates in position when he needed to. And they have CJ Allen, they had Jalen Walker, so they were really talented, really smart linebacking group, and Mondon was a big part of that. So he was the top 100 player for me. I don't know if he starts, but then again, Jahad Campbell won't be available right away with the torn labrum, so I could see Smile Mondon getting some meaningful reps early on because of that. I think it's going to be mainly in the coverage aspect, but if he can bulk up a little bit, I think if his play strength translates, then you could be looking at a gem in this class.
All right, Ian, I want to get through all these players with you. I'm being a homer here because 168 and 181, I love the value. Howie Roseman called this a center-deficient league. The Eagles don't even need a center, one of the few teams. And they get Drew Kendall, this son of Pete Kendall, is a really good offensive lineman for years, former first-round pick. I broke my own rule, was a first-round pick. Kyle McCord, quarterback from Syracuse. If I was looking for a quarterback on day three, he'd be near the top of my list. Not that these guys are going to be starters in Philadelphia, because they're not, but I could see them as starters down the road in the NFL. Your thoughts on that potential pairing? Maybe they're playing center and quarterback somewhere else together down the road.
Yeah, potentially. You know, with Kyle McCord, I kind of had him pinpointed as a really good backup candidate on day three. I think with him, you've got a good arm, right? He was obviously a pretty highly touted recruit before he came to Ohio State, and then he transferred to Syracuse and lit the league up. I mean, he really took advantage of that opportunity and kind of proved that he was worth, you know, a draft pick, that he was worth consideration there. So I don't know if McCord will ever be a starter. I just, you know, looking at the athletic profile, he doesn't give me as much as I would want athletically. As a creator, you're not working with a ton, right? And I think as a processor, you know, he was really good in that Syracuse offense where it was a lot of, you know, first and second reads, you know, not too many full field progressions, which again, I think full field progressions.
That's college football though.
Yeah, exactly. And like, I don't want to say it's overrated in the evaluative spectrum because like, but I will say, you don't need a full field progression to see processing ability all the time. You know, I think sometimes simple pre-snap reads, understanding where to go with the ball, you know, seeing defensive formations, that can have an effect too. So, you know, we kind of get kind of binary with, you know, full field progressions or not, but it's not that simple as a processing evaluation. And I do think when it comes to pre-snap, knowing where to go with the ball, getting it out quickly, understanding DB leverage and, you know, how to place the ball with accuracy too. I think McCord really improved at that over the tail end of his career. Right. So, you know, you look at the Eagles, they have Tanner McKee as well, who profiles pretty well as a backup in the short term. So, you know, it wasn't a pick that they needed to make, but I think adding depth to the QB room is never a bad thing. And Kyle McCord, in my opinion, has enough of the processing ability, improved his accuracy, has a good arm too. You know, athletically, he's never going to be that creator where I'm going to say he'll elevate a unit at all. But, you know, a backup, potential spot starter down the line, he adds depth to the unit.
Yeah, and by the way, when I said, hey, you know, I'm talking like bottom 10 starter. Yeah. I'm with you. He doesn't have the upside. I'm a little bit higher on, but I'm talking bottom of the league. You know, there's never 32 great quarterbacks in the NFL.
And, you know, that's the thing is just like improving the depth and the security. So if someone else does have to go in, you have someone who understands the scheme because he's been brought up in it. So I think, you know, drafting QBs this stage is never a bad thing. And if there's anyone to draft, like you said, I think Kyle McCord is a guy who really proved that he was worth it this past year. Again, decent processor, decent accuracy, good arm, you know, toughness as well. So all of those things lend well to at least being a backup security blanket role. Drew Kendall, real quick, 6'4", 308. I think he ran in the 5 second range, 40 yard dash, which again, you know, those tests aren't all too translatable at the NFL level, you know, 1-to-1, but it does give you an idea of his athleticism. I think he had a 1.79 10 yard split. So close to that 1.77 threshold that, you know, is kind of pinpointed for potential starters. He's pretty explosive off the line. He's a pretty free flowing mover at his size, not an overly powerful guy. Not a guy who's going to outmatch defenders one-on-one all the time, right? Not a guy who's going to fight through nose tackles all the time, but I think just a really solid fundamental player. You know, I think he does a pretty good job acquiring leverage. He's got pretty good natural leverage with his pad level, right? But then he's got some dense compact mass too. He can play square. He's got the footwork to keep guys inside his frame. And, you know, I think that experience, that athleticism, those two things will underpin his game and help him be a quality backup to Cam Jurgens. So, you know, I don't know if he'll be. Maybe you could potentially get a comp pick for him down the line if he has to start a little bit and proves himself, does well enough. I think he was one of those centers in this class who had distant starting potential for sure, right? I think he's got to learn to be more of a displacer at times. The power element does need to improve in his game a little bit, but yeah. He's athletic, well-rounded, and he's got experience. I think those things bode well for a backup.
Ian, round 6, pick 209. I liked this pick because I just felt like 25 and a half sacks in 2 years. You got to be able to do something. Talk to me about him. Antoine Powell Ryland from Virginia Tech, the Eagles' final pick in the draft. I know there's two tackles in there in between McCord and Powell Ryland, but I was fascinated with this prospect because of just the sheer amount of production he had at college. Do you think that can translate over to the NFL at all? I know it's a 6-round pick, so obviously it's a little bit of a dart throw, but I think it's a worthy dart throw at that. What do you see there?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think it was a worthy dart throw too. And I think you're probably looking at a DPR, a designated pass rush specialist, because when it comes to his frame, you know, I think it was around 6'2 and a half, 258 pounds, 31 inch arms. That's the key. That's the trouble right there, right? You know, not having super long arms. There are times when he can get outreached, especially in the run game, right? So I think Antoine Powell-Ryland, your best bet is him just being that wide nine designated pass rusher where he can work with a runway and just kind of terrorize tackles either with that speed to power, because he does have legitimate speed to power, but then also working around the apex too, because I think he's explosive enough. He had a 36-inch vertical, 10-4 broad jump, 4.69 40 as well with a 1.64 10-yard split. So reasonably explosive, reasonably fast, not a guy who's going to outreach guys, not a guy who's going to dictate the point in run defense, but a player who has a hot motor in the pass rush phase, has a pretty good bag of moves too. But then I think the important thing, the speed to power, you know, even though he's not the longest guy, he's an energized accelerator where he can build up speed with his lower body. He's got great compact mass and he can drive through guys, you know, kind of attack inside the torso or work the outside shoulder. I think he can do both those things too. So might be limited to that DPR role, but within that role, I think he's a great add to the rotation and he gives you a little bit more dynamic ability when it matters most, when that other team is pressured to make a play in the passing game and you want to make the QB uncomfortable. Powell-Ryland is a guy who can do that ultimately. So I like the pick a lot. I like the value. I think it's a good confluence of value and talent.
With Powell-Ryland, because a lot of Eagles fans are very excited about him because of the college production. So, you know, from a scouting perspective, can you kind of educate the people as far as how you parse out, you know, in other words, why is a guy so productive at a Power Five school in the sixth round of the NFL draft?
Yeah, you know, I think a big part of it is having the two phase upside, right? Run defense and pass defense. And especially, you know, lately in the NFL, we're seeing a lot of, you know, too high, you know, teams have to be able to withstand against the run with less personnel. If you can do that, you can be more versatile with your coverage unit and on the back end, right? So, you know, I'll give an example for this class in particular, the San Francisco 49ers. Their first round pick was Mykel Williams. Their second round pick was Alfred Collins, a nose tackle and an edge defender who translates really well against the run. And I think what we're seeing with this too high evolution is that, yeah, you can do odd fronts and all that, but like if you can dissuade the offense from running the ball, or, you know, limit their ability to run the ball efficiently with less personnel, that gives you more flexibility. You can do more nickel looks, right? You know, so I think Antoine Powell-Ryland, you look at a guy like that, right? Really productive pass rusher, but does he have the run defense profile to hold up on a down-to-down basis? With the lacking length, that's a struggle for me. And it does show up at times on tape where other guys can outreach him and drive him out of the play because they can extend, they can anchor, and it's really tough to break through that, right? So I think that's where it comes in, is that one, you know, the run defense utility. And then two, I do think he's very athletic. I don't think he's quite an elite athlete for his size as well. I think he has great explosiveness, but again, you know, not hitting that elite threshold, being, you know, right, a little bit stiff at times with the denser frame, you know, just little details that kind of, you know, act as separators. And again, you know, a sixth round pick can become a fourth round pick or a third round pick very easily if they just add one little thing to their game, right? So there's a lot of variance with each team's board, but I would say the run defense, the uncertain run defense projection hurts him a little bit because that confines him a little bit, but then also not having quite the elite pass rush upside at the NFL level. I think he can be a very good DPR, but again, there are some minute limitations that do detract from that a little bit.
And the last one, Ian, Miles Hinton, Cameron Williams. I think the process here, the Eagles went one of the two to hit. Miles Hinton, the son of Chris Hinton, because I'm old, one of the greatest offensive linemen I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. So he's got those genetics. Cameron Williams, 1 year. A lot of people think if he went back, he could have, you know, really went up the draft board. Your thoughts on those two players and their potential?
Yeah, so I'll start with Miles Hinton because I wasn't sure he was going to be drafted, but I think he entered the exact right situation. And looking at the video of Jeff Stoutland calling him, like, it seems like they're excited to work with him too. So I'm kind of excited to see what they envision there. I think the Eagles have always been a little bit more willing to test the waters with bigger offensive guards. You know, some teams, if a guy gets past a certain size threshold, it's like, all right, we'll stick him at tackle. But the Eagles are willing to play around with big guards. And you look at Miles Hinton, 6'7".
Becton, yeah.
Yeah, Mekhi Becton as well. So like 6'7", 323, 34-inch arms, had a 31.5-inch vertical, pretty explosive on the linear plane. I think he's a little plodding and heavy-footed when it comes to lateral mobility, but that's why moving him into a phone booth at guard, I think, is more appealing for him. I think he can really outmatch guys with his physical tools and his size. He's got pretty good physicality as well. So, you know, I I kind of eyed him as more of a developmental player, right? But I think moving him inside to guard and letting him work with Jeff Stoutland, you could get a value deal here. I really think that. I think the power profile is there. The size, again, can outmatch guys, and there's a lot to work with. I think Cameron Williams, kind of a similar idea, a developmental player. If he had stayed in school and refined his game a little bit more, we might have been talking about him as the top 100 pick next year. So I you know, coming out early wasn't the best thing for him, but I think it was kind of a silver lining, a blessing in disguise, because again, he lands with the Eagles and Jeff Stoutland, right, and he can be taught by them too. He's a very athletic player. Again, I think for his size, being around 6'6", the playing weight is probably over 330, right? And he's pretty fleet footed for his size. I mean, when I was watching him in pass protection, I thought he got great depth on his kick. I thought he had enough foot speed to match guys to the apex. It's just, right now, the operational side of his game is really inconsistent. You talk about pad level, leverage maintenance, weight transfers when you're matching. You know, those are things that he's going to have to work on, because it can be kind of clunky and uncoordinated right now. The hand placement can be very inefficient and inconsistent too. So there's a lot of work to be done with Cam Williams, but the athletic upside, the physical upside is undeniable. And I think, you know, in a situation like this where Lane Johnson is under contract for the foreseeable future, you know, Cam Williams, there's no guarantee that he's going to play meaningful snaps in year one or even year two. So I think having that time to work behind the scenes with one of the best OL coaches in the league, I think that'll bode very well for him. So two guys who landed in a really good spot. I'm excited to see what ultimately they can do and, you know, how close they can reach to their potential.
Good breakdown there of the NFL draft. Ian, I got to ask you though, for, you know, you cover this thing, you look up every single prospect. It's 300, 400, 500 prospects in some case, and then you watch it all unfold, right? What stood out to you from a macro level, from the whole NFL? Is it Shedeur Sanders? Obviously, that was one of the big storylines. What were some of the big things you noticed in the NFL draft as you kind of grade every player, dive into the tape, rank them on your big board, and then watch where they fall? What were some of the things that stood out to you overall about this NFL draft?
Yeah, I mean, Shedeur Sanders one was probably the first one. I won't dwell on it too much because I know it's been talked about to death. You know, I think with him, it was kind of a classic case of, was the media evaluation right or did we miss something? You know, because the media and the GMs always have some differences, some dissonance. Right. I think with Shedeur Sanders, you know, obviously there was a lot of smoke about the interviews not going well. I think there is enough smoke that you look at, you know, from a public standpoint where you can say, okay, maybe the makeup as a leader did concern them, because I know, you know, the spring game last spring, you know, there was the players transferring out and he's kind of calling them out on social media. Like that's not something you want in a locker room, right? And then, you know, after a game where he threw an interception, kind of blaming his teammates as well. So there's enough smoke where you can be reasonably critical, but I also think confidence is a great thing to have for a QB, right? So he's a very confident guy. I think he has enough talent to potentially sift his way out of that Cleveland Browns QB rotation. And I think going in round five could ultimately be the fire under him that lights that, yeah, right? That shows him that, hey, I need to do things a little differently. But again, I have an opportunity here. So I hope he takes it as a learning experience. I hope he does, because I do think he has enough to potentially start down the line. Elsewhere, you know, just kind of the usual culprits who had really good drafts. I think the Eagles had a great one, Howie Roseman. I really liked the Chiefs draft. Aside from their second rounder, I thought that was a little high, but they got Jalen Royals from Utah State in round four, which was one of the best value deals in the class for me. The Seattle Seahawks had a phenomenal draft too. You know, even though Nick Imanwori, I wasn't super high on him, I think going to Mike McDonald is probably the best landing spot for him, because he's a very versatile defender and McDonald will know how to get the best out of him. But then they got Torrey Horton from Colorado State in round five. I mean, that's a guy who I think can be a starting wide receiver right out of the gate. And then there were a lot of other teams that did very well. Some teams are reloading on offense, like the Panthers, like the Bears, but then some are really reinforcing the defense, the Cardinals being one. So I think, you know, were there missed opportunities? We'll see. But overall, you know, I think the overarching storyline is that a lot of teams made the most of this opportunity. And now it's just kind of using the talent that they have in-house and getting them where they need to be, because that's going to be where the threads kind of disconnect as well. So very excited to see how this one unfolds. You know, I think a lot of overarching storylines, but a lot of talent that was added to the league kind of in mass. And I think, you know, not too many teams separated themselves. I think all of them kind of strengthen their bid to, if not compete this year, then at least get the ball rolling for the years to come.
One follow-up for you, Ian. NFC East, I thought the Cowboys had a great draft. I thought the New York Giants had a great draft. Yeah. The Eagles had a solid draft. Commanders didn't impress me as much, but just for the viewers who care a lot about the NFC East, obviously, how did you see that ranking out? Give me a rank of the best NFC drafts here.
Yeah. So I'd probably keep the Eagles at one. I really like
always.
I'm not just trying to win the brownie points here. You know, I think Andrew McCuba, Jahan Campbell, I really like the value additions they got, and Ty Robinson as well. So I'll put them at one. The New York Giants, if it all depends on Jackson Dart. It all depends on Jackson.
I don't like that pick, Ian.
I wasn't super high on it either. I think getting him in a situation, though, where he has an improving offensive line, you got to figure out right tackle at some point, because Evan Neal is not the long-term answer. but he's got Malik Nabers, and I think aside from Jackson Dart, their draft was lights out. Like, I can't find a pick that I didn't like aside from that. So it's really tough because I want to love their draft, and I love it a lot.
I love their defensive line.
Exactly. Yeah, like Abdul Carter, Darius Alexander. Like, come on, man. Like, that's a really, really good haul. It's just, you know, that class is going to be it's going to be make or break with Jackson Dart, for better or worse. You know, like the entire reputation of that for years to come is going to be whether Dart is the answer or he's not. And, you know, maybe the players that they added outside of that lay a foundation for the next guy, but that's a little cloudy because of that. But I loved their class outside of that. The Commanders only had 5 picks, so that kind of dulled their outlook. They didn't have as much volume, but I actually liked what they did with their first 2 picks a lot. I think, you know, Josh Connerly potentially makes that offensive line closer to elite because he's a very athletic tackle with pretty good technique and refinement for his age. I think he can slot in right away. They got Connerly, Laramie Tunsil, and then Sam Cosmi, and then they can let Brandon Coleman or Nick Algretti win the guard spot, Tyler Biadasz at center. So that unit is really strong. I think Connerly helps with that. And then Trey Amos in round 2. Trey Amos was my 16th overall player. They got him at 61st overall. So he was one of my favorite prospects. I think, you know, man coverage, off man, zone, 6'1", 185, 32-inch arms. He's a playmaker. He's fluid, explosive, instinctive. Was one of my favorite prospects, and they got him at incredible value. Getting Jalen Lane in round 4, I think a really versatile player who you can use on end arounds, off jet sweeps, but then also let him go vertical. So I think he'll fit Cliff Kingsbury's scheme really well. And then their last 2 picks, I think they did a pretty good job too. So I would put the Commanders 3rd, but it's really tough because I loved what the Cowboys did in the first 3 rounds.
I like the Cowboys. I would put the Cowboys 2nd. They took Booker too soon, but I think he's going to be a good player.
I think he will too. Yeah. My big qualm with the Cowboys is that they didn't even touch wide receiver. You know, so you got CeeDee Lamb and then Jalen Tolbert, right? Like Jonathan Mingo. Yeah. I really have concerns about CeeDee Lamb getting doubled a lot, and then where are they going to be able to go, right? You know, I think my philosophy is always that you need at least three guys that you can go to at wide receiver. And the Cowboys right now, I think they only have one. And to be fair, if we had graded these classes after just day 1 and 2, the Cowboys might have been my favorite class because they got Tyler Booker, who, again, the athletic limitations are there, but he's a very, very good player. He's going to be a very solid pro because technically sound, big, incredibly physical. You know, and I think he'll fit their identity very well. Round 2, getting Donovan Ezeraku with the value they got. Again, the speed to power is a little bit concerning because it's not there, but he's fluid. He's a great pass rusher. I think he can be a really good implement for them. And then getting Savon Revelle in round 3, again, a top 25 prospect for me if he's fully healthy. A cornerback trio of Trayvon Diggs, Savon Revelle, Deron Bland, that can be a top 3 CB duo in the league if he can stay healthy. I mean, that can be locked down. So I loved what they did on day 1 and 2. It's just day 3. Some of the value decisions that they made kind of lost me a little bit, like taking a linebacker who's kind of inconsistent, not super athletic, over Torrey Horton, who was the top 75 guy for me, who would have filed in right away as a wide receiver too. That kind of rubbed me the wrong way. I still think you need more playmakers on offense. I really question how they're going to be able to operate that way. But again, I still liked what they did. I think Jaden Blue is going to be a great spark plug at the RB rotation. So I think they got better. It's just the NFC East is one of the toughest divisions in football. So the margin for error is really, really thin.
Great breakdown, Ian. One more last question for you. We appreciate all the extra time you gave us today at IC_draft. Truly one of the best draft picks, and you guys can tell after listening to him here on Birds 365 a few times this draft cycle. Who has the highest ceiling on the Philadelphia Eagles draft class?
The highest ceiling.
Well, take care. And one more. The highest floor as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, Jahan Campbell. He's got the best.
I was going to say, like, probably Jahan Campbell for the high ceiling. You know, I think as athletic as he is, as many different ways as you can use him, like, to me, that's not too difficult for me. Yeah. I think he has.
But who's number 2? That's because I'm taking Jahan out of it because to me, it's pretty obvious. But
It's difficult. No. I mean, Cameron Williams' ceiling is very, very high. The floor is very, very low. But if you can refine his technique, then if you can let him develop and kind of stack like those days year over year, I think Cam Williams, especially learning from Jeff Stoutland, learning from Lane Johnson too. Like, I don't want to sell Eagles fans on the Kool-Aid because, again, we need to see it happen, right? It doesn't always happen for these developmental guys. But I will say Cam Williams, had he stayed in school and continued to refine his game and show out against SEC competition, he might have been a top 100 player next
year. Yeah, I'm happy to hear you say that because I was thinking the same thing. I know he came out after only 1 year starting.
Yeah. So I think, you know, getting him in this situation is great. And then the highest floor, it's tricky because I think he's closer to the highest ceiling for me too. But Andrew Mukuba, I'll go with the highest floor again, because you can use him in so many different roles. He's so instinctive and intelligent on top of the coverage mobility. Again, like we talked about, he's got to up his weight a little bit, up his weight class to kind of hold up against the NFL rigors. But as far as being able to be diverse and roll flexible, but then also a playmaker, I think he's one of the guys who can make an impact right away in that secondary.
Ian, thank you so much for joining, man. We appreciate it very much. Ian Cummings at @IC_draft, the best in the business here on Birds 365, giving you guys the heat on the Eagles draft class. Great stuff, Ian. We appreciate it, man. We'll talk to you again soon.
Yes, sir. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Bud. Appreciate it.
Cummins joining us here on Birds 365. Absolutely great breakdown there at the NFL draft. John, he definitely gave some Eagles fans some excitement about some of those day three picks.
Yeah.
Guys, top hundreds. You know, you took Smile Mundon at 161. He said he was a top 100 player. Ty Robinson at 111. He was a top 100 player for Ian. Pretty good breakdown there of the Eagles draft class, Johnny Mac.
Big upside for Cameron Williams. I like his thought process with Miles Hinton moving inside to guard. See, most people wouldn't think of that, but the Eagles have a history, as Ian pointed out, of using bigger bodies inside. I like how he explained, you know, the production versus the projection standpoint for Antoine Powell Ryland. I think he did a good job there.
Yeah, he did.
And then, yeah, I mean, I'm a bigger floor guy. You see it with Drew Kendall and Kyle McCord. You know, we talked about some of the limitations. And as I said, bottom 10 quarterback in the NFL is pretty good. So I'm a little bit higher in Kyle than Ian, but Ian's great. Ian's great. And you see it. But I'll say I'd like the Cowboys number two in the NFC East.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.